Welcome to this audio introduction to Tom, Dick and Harry, produced by the New Vic Theatre together with Kenny Wax Productions. I'm Mim Bernard and together with Pam Beach, I will be describing the show on Saturday the 9th of July at 2:15pm. Each half of the performance lasts for just over an hour with one 20-minute interval. The touch tour will begin at 1:30pm and we'll meet you in the foyer in front of box office just before then. Co-written by Andrew Pollard, Michael Hugo and Teresa Heskins, Tom, Dick and Harry tells the true story of one of the most audacious escape attempts in World War history. During the Second World War, several thousand servicemen from the Allied Air Forces, including personnel from across the Commonwealth, were shot down over occupied Europe and subsequently interned as prisoners of war. They regarded it as their duty to escape, which they did with regularity and ingenuity. Upon recapture, serial escapers were transferred to camps with ever-increasing security, and the finest escape artists found themselves in the infamous high-security Stalag Luft III prisoner of war camp. It was here, in 1942, that they began to dig three escape tunnels, codenamed Tom, Dick and Harry. The prisoners hid their covert digging activity in plain sight with choir practice, gymnastic exercise and even cabbage growing as they tunnelled beneath the camp's huts to effect their escape. The script is based on what were, until 1972, top secret documents held at the National Archives. It debunks myths, honours the international collaboration amongst the men and celebrates the spirit of those who were involved in a long drawn out cat and mouse game with their captors. The show not only explores the daring escape, but also looks at some of the dangerous routes the escapees took out of Nazi occupied Europe. Consequently, there are numerous locations in the piece, not just those within the camp, but also places and journeys across different European countries. There is music too, including a few calypso numbers. Now to tell you a little about the New Vic and the set. If you haven't visited the New Vic before, it is a theatre in the round with tiered seats in purple rising all around a flat circular stage, which is approximately 10 metres in diameter, or 30 feet in old money. Three evenly spaced entrances lead up onto the stage. Two are used by actors and audience, and the third, slightly larger main entrance, is used only by actors. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other two entrances are at 4 and 8 o'clock. During the audio description, we will name the 4 o'clock entrance the right entrance and the 8 o'clock entrance the left entrance. By the main entrance at 1 o'clock, and by the left entrance at 9 o'clock, there is a section of acting space we call a notch. Behind the audience seating is a circular pathway known as the promenade. Five sets of aisle steps lead down from it to the stage. A balcony, edged with a safety barrier, is perched above the promenade. The aisles and promenade are used by both audience and actors. The frequent and rapid scene changes in the show, as well as the differing geographical locations, make it challenging to describe everything in the live audio description on July the 9th. Consequently, in this introduction, we want to give you an idea of how the main locations are set up. For this production, row A, the front row of seats, has been removed, and 23 rough wooden chairs, seemingly constructed out of old Red Cross packing cases, are arranged around the periphery of the stage. With padded seats and two cushions on each, some of them will be occupied by New Vic audience members. They also represent the seating in the camp's own theatre and are used in other scenes, including in the huts. The colour palette for the show is deliberately very muted, but is brought to life by numerous projections, lighting and sound effects. The stage floor itself is largely grey, but dominated by a series of five concentric squares working out to the edges of the stage from a central white square. This small central square measures 60 centimetres by 60 centimetres, or 2 feet by 2 feet, and is the exact width and height of the three escape tunnels. At their widest parts, each subsequent square is grey and then outlined first in white, then in black. The visual impression is of passing along the tunnels from the entrances to the further reaches in the distance. Three movable square platforms of different sizes, but in the same pattern and colours, are used to help create the different huts and tunnels and to hide several trapdoors. As the play opens, the largest platform is positioned centre stage. In subsequent scenes, it is moved into and in front of the notch by the main entrance. On it, there will be a very basic wooden bunk bed with rough-looking grey bedding. In front of the bed, to the right, is a wooden clothes horse on which is an assortment of socks and underwear. This hides the entrance to Tom, the first tunnel, which is beside the chimney in hut 123. Hanging above the bed to the left is a metal light shade and bulb, and on the floor, a portable black gramophone player. The middle-sized platform is used to bring on props such as four large Red Cross crates and cardboard boxes of rations. Most importantly, it represents the drain sump in Wash Hut 122, which is the entrance to Dick, the second tunnel. On the smallest platform, in Hut 104, sits a cast iron stove. Beneath its terracotta-tiled fake hearth, it hides the opening to Harry, the third tunnel. An ingeniously constructed wooden frame enables the prisoners to remove and replace the stove over the tunnel entrance, even when it is lit and too hot to touch. A homemade coffee percolator is keeping warm on top, while a square table with the same grey, white and black top and a couple of wooden chairs and stools completes the interior of Hut 104. In some scenes, the top of the table unfolds like the pages of a book to reveal plans and travel documents for their escape, or, alternatively, the brown paper patterns for the civilian suits and uniforms they skillfully fashion from blankets and other materials. Other main features of the set are two fixed black metal ladders, one by the main entrance and the other at the left entrance. These extend right up into the roof and are used by the actors when climbing down into and back up out of the final escape tunnel. Three watchtowers on the balcony are located at 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock. And, fixed on the rail by the right entrance, is a translation device which beeps loudly every time it is used to translate between German and English. Other props are brought on and off stage as the play unfolds scene by scene. For example, the camp commandant's office is furnished with a dark wooden, red leather top desk, either side of which are two wood and red leather chairs on wheels. A brass lamp with an emerald green glass shade, together with a fine bone china tea set on a silver tray, sit on the desk. Nearby, on a wooden stand, the commandant also has his precious wind-up gramophone player with its brass horn and his collection of old records. Across the room, by the right entrance, is a small desk on which is a telephone, a typewriter, a desk lamp and a nameplate. During another scene in the first half, when the men are practicing an acrobatic routine to mark the grand opening of the camp theatre, a wooden vaulting horse is placed centre stage. To one side of it is a springboard, and on the other, a very large, very deep, pale grey crash mat. There is also a rail by the right entrance, with various costumes hanging from it. Then, in the second half, as part of a concert in the camp theatre, four sets of footlights are brought on, together with three freestanding microphones. The all-important red and green raffle tickets appear in this scene. Green for those who will be part of the great escape, red for those who will stay. Listen out too for when the men use the wooden slats from their bunk beds to shore up the tunnels, for when they fashion an air pump and bellows out of their kit bags and tin cans, and construct wooden dollies on which to pull each other through the escape tunnel. An uncooperative striped deck chair and a bicycle also make an appearance in the second half. And not forgetting other props, such as the prisoner's weekly meagre ration of 2 loaves of hard bread, 200 grams of sausage and a cabbage. The galvanised buckets, tin plates, mugs and contraband tins, or their boxing gloves, football, pack of cards and game of Monopoly. A bottle of red ink, another of vintage brandy, and a Leica camera and tripod feature too. As noted earlier, projections, lighting and sound effects are important throughout this production. At frequent intervals, vivid images and scrolling data are projected onto and around the concentric squares on the floor. These projections variously show aerial views of clouds, bombs dropping and explosions, or maps of Europe, the layout of the camp, its huts, sentry posts, fences and watchtowers, or the escape plans, fake IDs and travel documents. Often accompanied by a compelling voiceover, they are also used to introduce us to the main characters and sometimes to their thought processes. In addition, they convey information on progress with the shafts and tunnels, including their depth and length, provide us with insights into the decoding of secret information smuggled into the camp, and during the actual escape, show us how many men per minute are going through the tunnels. Early on, when one of the prisoners is sent to the cooler, the white edges of the second concentric square light up one by one to represent the walls of his solitary confinement cell. And frost is shown, spreading its icy fingers slowly across the floor. Lighting is also used to great effect during the actual escape, when the auditorium is in darkness, apart from a single centimetre-wide beam of light running across the stage from the left entrance to the main entrance. Partway across, the escapees will stop at what they call a junction house, named after the tube stations at Leicester Square or Piccadilly Circus. I will now hand over to Pam, who's going to tell you about the characters and costumes.
A company of 9 male actors, some playing multiple roles, reenact this epic story. Costumes are period specific and accurate. Designer Liz Evans has been able to use actual images from the camp and looked at the work of war artists of the time to help with the design of the costumes. There wasn't a prisoner uniform as such. The POWs wore what they had been captured in or received through Red Cross parcels. The Luftwaffe and the RAF share a very similar colour of Air Force blue uniform, which is helpful for costume changes when actors are playing different characters. As it's set during winter, a number of large coats help facilitate some costume changes. In total, there are 58 costumes, each actor having a basic character costume and layers. All POWs' trousers have braces. I'll tell you now what the 7 prisoners in the play and the 4 officers guarding them wear when we first meet them. All characters are of average height with short haircuts. RAF Squadron Leader Roger Ballard is in his 30s and has a moustache. A barrister, champion skier and serial escaper, he's a dapper, intelligent, skilled decoder and a confident character who commands respect. He wears an RAF blue flight jacket and trousers, white shirt and a spotted cravat. He also has a hand-tailored, non-uniform, brown wool overcoat and carries a brown leather holdall. RAF Wing Commander Albert Mortimer Edgerton Ray, known as Wings, is 45 and a career serviceman. tallest of the prisoners, he manages the men's use of the camp facilities. And, as another serial escaper, works well with Ballard. He wears uniform trousers and bomber jacket, a greeny-blue polo neck jumper, and carries a canvas kit bag. United States Air Force Flight Lieutenant Blake Landry is 25 and a miner's mucker. That's someone who shovels the broken rocks into mine cars or onto conveyor belts. He wears brown wool uniform trousers, a cream polo necked jumper, and a brown leather jacket. He has a light tan woolly hat and carries a canvas kit bag. Royal Australian Air Force pilot officer James Waters, known as Lucky Jimmy, is in his 20s and a farmer. He wears full flight uniform with a brown fur-lined leather jacket, a white scarf and brown leather flying helmet. Flight Lieutenant Bedrich Janicek of the Czechoslovak Air Force is in his 30s and a tailor. Neat and precise in his dress and manner, he's very agile and creative. He wears an RAF bomber jacket and trousers and side cap. When sewing, he uses thin-rimmed glasses kept on a cord round his neck. He has a canvas kit bag. RAF Flight Lieutenant Bob Vandenberg, a medical student from Holland, in his 30s, likes to be called Bob. He's inventive, repurposing discarded everyday items to great effect, and has perfected making coffee in the kitchen. The most casually dressed of all of them, he wears Air Force blue trousers, a hand-knitted tank top over a collarless shirt, a green non-uniform silk scarf, a blue drill work jacket, and a pale tan corduroy cap. RAF Flight Lieutenant Clark Josephs, known as CJ, is in his 20s and a trainee barrister. Of Jamaican origin, his guitar is usually not far from him, often slung across his back. He leads the occasional singing, especially his favoured calypsos. Luftwaffe officers are in charge of the prisoners. Ledermann is the camp commandant. He's in his 60s, Austrian, an old-school aristocrat and retired. He wears full German uniform, field grey trousers, jacket and peaked cap with insignia and badges. Another Austrian, Hauptmann Hans Huber, is in his 40s, an engineer in civilian life, who wears small wire-framed glasses. He's the first Luftwaffe officer we meet as he stands, an imposing figure, alone in the centre of the stage, in a grey greatcoat, large peaked cap and leather gloves. He has full German uniform with white shirt and tie and Luftwaffe's insignia. Unteroffizier Karl Giesler is 40-ish and an anti-escape guard. Because of his role in the camp, he wears a ferret uniform of a field grey cotton boiler suit with belt holster for gun and torch, a field cap and three-quarter length heavy black leather boots. Always suspicious of what the prisoners may be up to, he misses nothing out of his constant checks of their environments, using his poking stick to search under or into everything. When not in use, it hangs from his belt or he holds it under his arm. Giesler is the only character whose salute is always a Nazi one. Gefreiter Fritz Schmidt, known as Fritz, joins Giesler as a young, nervous, novice anti-escape guard. He's dressed like Giesler. A watchtower guard in full uniform and hard helmet looks out with his rifle poised. Now a little about camp life. For the opening of the theatre, The prisoners form an acrobatic troupe to give a display, calling themselves the Royal Raviolis. They practice in PE kit of black shorts, white vests, and a variety of gym shoes and socks. Wings, in addition, wears a striped waistcoat. Ballard appears in trousers with braces and shirt sleeves rolled up. In a later theatre show, Ballard, immaculately dressed in a black dinner suit, bow tie and patent shoes, is compere. Four prisoners perform as showgirls with costumes made out of what they found. The star of the act is CJ, in a full costume as Carmen Veranda. Expect laughter as this prisoner, who has a moustache by the way, swaggers in high-heel, sling-back, sparkling sandals, dressed in a bright, multicoloured cotton print outfit. The full split skirt has four overlapping frilly layers, and a cropped Cuban blouse has short-sleeved and a wide neckline. The flamboyant outfit is completed with a matching chunky red and green necklace and bracelets, and an oversized turban hat with three bananas lying on top and a few butterflies fluttering from the back. For their multicoloured outfits as three backing singers to Carmen, the prisoners too wear layered skirts, split at the front, revealing their pink frilly bloomers. They have halter neck spotted tops, scarves round their heads tied in big bows at the front, and high-heel sling-back sandals. All the girls swish their skirts and exaggerate their roles to give much fun. Meanwhile, back to the process of tunnelling. Prisoners going to dig underground wear clean underwear, emerging afterwards with dirty underwear. To assist in the moving of sand from underground as the prisoners are digging, penguin trousers are created with long johns and rope to provide channels in trousers where sand is collected as they dig and released after the dig by pulling on the rope. A word about escape clothing without giving anything away. A lot of the play's costumes are modified to be escape clothes. Some have fake linings, hidden pockets, or cunning string technology to allow for super quick transformations. Many of the cast are also various faceless characters who aid an escaped prisoner on his journey beyond the camp. Dressed totally in black, their heads are covered in black muslin so no faces can be seen. They move slowly as they interact with the escapee. The audience is actually part of the whole scene. Even though we're onlookers, we're thought of as other prisoners in the camp. A few audience members sitting at the front will be highlighted by handheld spotlights at different times. They're given names and called upon for specific tasks while staying in their seats. There's telephonist Rudy, lookout Partington, Nalen, Minty Martin, Farnton, Alvarez and Lubianski. Don't worry, this won't happen where you're sitting. Hopefully this introduction has given you a glimpse and some insight into this vibrant, engaging, inspiring and entertaining play to enhance your enjoyment of a fast-paced show. Mim and I will audio describe to give you as much information as we can. We look forward to meeting you for the Touch Tour, when we will go on stage and meet Deputy Stage Manager Kate Wilcock. Please listen on for names of the cast and the creative team. The cast. Sam Craig is CJ. David Fares, Gisela. Andreas Gorkas, Janacek. Michael Hugo plays Huber. Michael Hugo plays Huber and Bob. Perry Moore is Fritz, the voice of the data blast projected onto the floor, and an understudy. Andrew Pollard plays Lederman and Wings. Nicholas Richardson is Landry. Dominic Thorburn, Ballard. And Eddie Westbury is Lucky Jimmy. Other understudies are Joshua Lister and Tom Hardman. Some of the creatives. The director is Teresa Heskins. Composer and musical director James Atherton. Calypso song composer Tobago Crusoe. Set designer is Laura Wilstead. And costume designer Liz Evans. Lighting designer is Daniela Beatty. And sound designer Alex Day. Projection design is by Illuminos. Set and made props by New Vic Workshop. Costumes by the New Vic Costume Department. Lighting and sound by the New Vic Technical Team. Thank you.